You are listening to RudolfSteinerAudio.com. If you are listening to the podcast of this, it is located at RudolfSteiner.podbean.com. Please consider becoming a patron. As well, there are two publishing houses, SteinerBooks.org in America and RudolfSteinerPress.com in England, who are the sole publishers of Steiner into English and have given me permission to do these recordings. Please consider patronizing them as well. This is a reading of a couple of cycles of lectures by Rudolf Steiner. It's Collected Works, Volume 314, 13 lectures in all, translated by Anna Moise, entitled Physiology and Healing, Treatment, Therapy, and Hygiene. This is the fifth lecture in the second part. The second part is entitled Anthroposophical Basis for the Practice of Medicine. This fifth lecture is numbered Lecture 9 in the book, entitled On Eurythmy Therapy, given in the Medical Week, given in Stuttgart on the 28th of October, 1922. I've been asked also to say something about our eurythmy therapy. Essentially, I presented the empirical material for this eurythmy therapy in the last medical course I gave in Dornach, and there was hardly any need to go beyond what was said then. Used as intended, the therapy can indeed be of far-reaching significance. Today I would prefer to speak to you about the whole meaning and significance of eurythmy therapy. As you know, it has in a way evolved from a pure art, which did initially develop as an art form, and in some respects the art of eurythmy must provide a kind of basis for real insight into eurythmy therapy. Perhaps the clearest way of putting it is that I try, first of all, to show the difference between eurythmy as an art form and eurythmy therapy. Generally speaking, the basis of eurythmy is that we can metamorphose the processes that develop in the human organism when we speak, doing so in a particular direction. As an art, eurythmy, therefore, truly is a form of visible speech. We have to understand that there are two components to human speech. One arises from a particular way of using the plastic sculpted apparatus. After the earlier lectures, it is reasonable for me to speak of a, in quotes, plastic apparatus, a layer of the nervous system that lies further in. The sphere of ideas comes into this. Essentially, the ideation apparatus continues on in a rather complicated way in the speech apparatus, going as far as the build of the nervous system. And the one component of speech arises as this radiates out further, I'd say. The other component actually rises up from the human metabolic organism. In a way, we have dynamics arising from the human metabolic system meeting with dynamics coming from the human neurosensory system. The two meet in such a way that the metabolic system initially metamorphoses in the circulatory processes, and the principle of ideation coming from the neurosensory system metamorphoses in the respiratory system. The two dynamic systems then encounter one another in the respiratory and circulatory systems. With the aid of the speech organism, the whole is transmitted to the air, and the human astral organism is then also able to pour itself into the movements created in the air. Speech arises, if we consider the outermost periphery of the human organism, as it were, by embodiment of the ideation principle on the one hand, and of the metabolic principle on the other. A metabolic principle which, in terms of the soul, is in fact the will principle. We thus have everything which in the soul comes to expression in will, and physically is reflected in the metabolic system, insofar as the nervous system has a part in the will. It has a part insofar as metabolism takes place in the nervous system, not as neurosensory function. So the will principle, which comes to physical expression in the metabolic system, and the ideation principle, which I say comes to physical expression in a section, a layer of the neurosensory principle, come together in a, in quotes, resultant, as it were. They then come to physical expression in ordinary speech sounds, or in song. It is something different with song, but it is indeed something similar. In eurythmy, we exclude the principle of ideation as such as far as possible, and let the will principle take effect. With this, ordinary speech sound metamorphoses into movements of the whole human organism. We thus enhance the one component, which is the will principle, or the metabolic principle. Weaken the ideation principle, or neurosensory principle, and eurythmy will be the result. This truly enables us to create human movement correlates for individual sounds, be they vowels or consonants. Just as a certain form and movement given to the air corresponds to an A or an L, so can an outwardly visible movement correspond to an A or an L. This is a movement structure, I'd say, which sensible and supersensible vision has taken from the human organism. It obeys the same laws of the human organism as speech sounds do, but is a metamorphosis of speech and oriented more toward the will principle. The whole alphabet can thus be put together also in this language. Every element of language can be represented in this eurythmy. When eurythmy is performed as an art, human attention and all processes in the human physical, etheric, and astral organism that support attentiveness turn to the sound in question. The word configuration, or the artistic configuration of a sentence, metric configuration, poetic configuration, and so on. In the art of eurythmy, human beings are wholly given up to the artistic configuration of speech sounds. As they are, of course, following the configuration of language, they are, in performing the art, given up to the outside world. And just as we don't hold on to an A in a word or an L, but these things are passing, so we are, in the art of eurythmy, dealing with something which may certainly proceed within the normally functioning human organism. With ordinary eurythmy as an art form, there is no other physiological consequence but that ordinarily the eurythmy will energetically harmonize the human functions, doing so insofar as they are a complete whole in the human organism. We are thus able to say that providing any excesses are avoided in performing the art of eurythmy, this activity also has a general health-giving effect. But everything conducive to health can also make people ill if it is overdone. And it is also possible to overdo eurythmy as an artistic activity. Professor Benedict, the famous neurologist and criminologist, who did not like the anti-alcohol movement, would stress again and again that many more people die of water than of alcohol. Statistically, this is true, for inappropriate excessive intake of water causes many different health problems. To the degree to which it is meant to be done, eurythmy, from the artistic point of view, it will anyway result in a certain state of satisfaction or dissatisfaction in the human organism, can, generally speaking, only be health-giving. As far as eurythmy therapy is concerned, the quality which lives in the devotion to configuring speech sounds, words, sentences, known in eurythmy as an art form, is reflected inward. It is reflected inward even by the fact that in eurythmy therapy, the sound ah, let us say, often has to be repeated a number of times. This is something totally different from moving from an ah to an e or the like in performing the art. We need to look into the actual healing process which may come with eurythmy. I must not fail here to voice a certain concern which is indeed likely to come to mind with things like this. Laymen and amateurs are apt to take hold of such things. I have, however, stressed from the beginning that eurythmy therapy must really be given by the physician, or at least by someone working very closely together with a physician. The reason is that things developing on the fringes of what is intended for medicine and spiritual science must be regarded in the same way as is the whole attitude to medicine in the science of the spirit. It truly is the case that in spiritual science relating to the field of medicine, one does not work toward the kind of thing I came across on an occasion 20 years ago. People attended at the Theosophical meetings who, well, called themselves naturopaths, and I was given a paper on one occasion that really contained only the same thing said repeatedly in different ways. Quote, "All healing consists in harmonizing what is inharmonious in the organism." Close quote. This statement was presented in all kinds of ways through 6 pages. Now, there cannot be the least objection to this statement, but it is a matter of being able to do it in a wholly specific way in the individual case. It gets to be a problem for people with the kind of attitude expressed in the last sentence. Quote, "Everything written in this paper shows that we can abandon medicine, which is so tremendously complex, and limit ourselves to harmonizing the inharmonious. And this," close quote, "as it literally said," continue quote, "is intoxicating in its simplicity," close quote. I cannot offer you such intoxicating simplicity. In the science of the spirit, the aim is to take medicine not to such an intoxicating simplicity, but, in fact, to a greater complexity, as you will no doubt realize from what has gone before. With the science of the spirit, you'll have to learn more, not less. As to less need to learn, well, that's the hitch. But things will get clearer, giving you a good overview, and learning will thus get more interesting. People who have been thinking that healing is to be made easier with the science of the spirit will realize that this is not the case, even from just listening to what I have been saying here. I'd say that this also holds true for eurythmy therapy. It is certainly the case that eurythmy therapy should not be given without a sound diagnosis. And it certainly is the case that it should only be practiced in full collaboration with expert medical knowledge. We are here truly dealing with the application of tremendously fine and detailed knowledge of the human organism. Even with ordinary speech, metabolic activity and plastic form-giving activity coming from the neurosensory system come together in the human organism. The, in quotes, resultant of the encounter discharges in the movement of air, which, relatively speaking, proceeds separately from the human organization, speech thus coming free of the organism. Because of this, everything created in eurythmy therapy is reflected back into the organism, and we therefore have the following. Imagine you are, for instance, bringing an ah movement together with an L movement. In the first place, you ask for the movements to be repeated, so that the matter does not discharge to the outside, but the repetition pours into inner processes of the human organism. But by always letting the vowel or the consonant quality act together in the ah movement or L movement, you have always taken the human organism into function, which means that the metabolic human being and the neurosensory human being are working together. Yes, the activity of the neurosensory system is generally reduced in eurythmy, but the two components are nevertheless working together in this specific relationship, with neurosensory activity reduced and metabolic activity increased by the eurythmic movement. And by letting an L movement, for example, be done repeatedly, we have the metabolic human being coming up against the neurosensory human being when we associate the L movement with an ah form. We may say, therefore, that the repeated excitation of necessary forms or movements involves the whole functioning of the human organism being taken along. If you ask for a consonantal movement to be done, for instance, this will initially act by unloading all its power, its inner dynamics, on the process of inhalation. And you therefore really have the whole process of inhalation in hand. Depending on the consonant you excite, you'll have the inhalation process in hand. You strengthen this process of inhalation with every consonantal activity. Perhaps you know from what has already been said of eurythmic therapy that here movements are somewhat modified from the way they are given expression in eurythmy as an art. We are able to say that when you do an ah or an l, the movement is always connected with strengthening or reducing the thrust applied when one inhales. You have to take into account that this involves inhalation in its totality. When we consider inhalation, we must first follow the route it takes, spreading at first in the middle part of the human organism, and then continuing via the spinal canal to the brain. Brain activity is essentially a coming together of refined breathing activity and neurosensory activity. No brain function exists that can be considered in isolation. It is always the resultant of neurosensory activity as such and breathing activity. In studying all cerebral processes, we must always also consider breathing activity. With the excitation of certain consonants, of the different consonants, you actually are in a position to influence, by the roundabout route of respiration, human plastic form-giving or modeling activity in a truly striking way. If you grasp the human organism artistically, you merely need to know, in the case of a child, for instance, who is just developing his permanent upper teeth, how are they created out of the modeling activity that moves downward from above? They are created in that, with the upper teeth, the modeling activity acts above all from front to back. How are the lower teeth produced? For the teeth in the mandible, the modeling activity acts from back to front. To sum up, the activity which comes into play when teeth develop, the upper teeth are formed from front to back, which means that the posterior aspects are generated, the anterior surfaces set off. Footnote, the German original is not clear here. The, in quotes, set off is a literal translation of abgesetzt, but it may also be set, put down, or also offset. Translator, end of footnote. The lower teeth are created from back to front. That is how the forces work together. If you find that the child has teething problems, you can simply support teething in the maxilla by asking him to make an ah movement. You can support teething in the mandible by asking him to make an o movement. You will actually have the modeling powers in hand by using certain influences. Yet, to provide this modeling activity altogether with sustenance, you must focus mainly, as it were, first on supporting the thrust of inhalation, adding to the modeling activity brought to bear by the ah and o movement in this way, the element which arises for you from the whole constitution of the individual. Let us say someone has weak peristalsis and tends to be mildly constipated. At the time of life, when the teeth develop, intestinal function is also very much connected with dental development, and we have to discern where the origins are of irregularities in dental development. If you assist the breath as it passes through the vertebral canal to the brain, and then encourages from there the modeling powers which we get in hand through vowel movements, you can, if you have this situation before you, ask the child to make an L movement. You merely have to study eurythmic therapy, and the diagnosis will show you how to use it. It should not really be used unless there is a diagnosis. Otherwise, there is the danger of doing entirely the wrong thing. But the point is that we must, I'd say, awaken a feeling for the artistic element in the dynamics of the whole human being. You have to develop an intuitive eye, EYE, for the artistic element. Let us assume a child just beginning to teethe evidently has problems. He or she shows signs of being unwell or the like that should not be there. You then find that intestinal movements are inadequate, irregular. You begin with L movements in preparation. Doing the L movement for some time meets the element one has guided toward the form-giving center by letting the child make ah or o movements, for the vowel movements influence exhalation. The vowels begin their action even in the brain. The stream of the breath is active in the brain, and everything which is a comprehensive, and everything which, in a comprehensive total sense, is connected with inhalation, comes to expression in the consonants. It can be supported and promoted by consonantal eurythmization. Everything connected with exhalation can be supported by doing vowels in eurythmy. But when you do that, you have to assess the repetitions which must be done, depending on whether force needs to be applied. The modeling element is then working directly together with the outward radiating element. If you are dealing with some renal condition, for example, you may say to yourself, quote, the renal condition is at a certain stage, let's say an early stage. The moment I ask for certain movements to be made, ah movements, for instance, I help the renal condition in an early stage. But if it has existed for a long time, and inadequate function has already led to deformation, I must first prepare the field by using consonants in eurythmy, and follow this with vowel eurythmy. I can thus use the vowel element to act on form-giving principles to counter the deformation which has developed. Close quote. In short, it has to be done as untheoretically as possible, but wholly from insight into the human organism, in health and sickness, to discover what I have given in the rules which I presented then in Dornach, rules that have been passed on to you. If heart and lung function is suppressed, for example, and this also affects the kidneys, you do very well with B or P movements, B or P, especially in the early stages. You can see from this that one really has all function in hand with this, and that everything depends on understanding that in every individual human organ one has a kind of centrifugal dynamics, plastically rounded off by dynamics acting from outside in, not wholly centripetally, therefore, but such that they may be called centripetal dynamics with an influence on every human organ. We will, altogether, only be in a position to do proper physiology when we are able to consider every single human organ in its polarity. For we have these polarities, centrifugal and centripetal dynamics, in every human organ. And for everything that sculpts, models, the distribution and differentiation of states of warmth in the human organism play a major role, as does the air status. With everything centrifugal, radiating out, everything in the human organism, coming from the individual dynamics of the substances of the world, plays an important role. And everything develops as the individual vitality of external entities is overcome in the human organism. These two dynamics have to be regulated, one against the other. And we may hope that eurythmy therapists will be trained who will develop a really subtle feeling for what may happen in the individual case. Here in particular, extraordinarily much will depend on an artistic state of mind. If you also consider that the whole system of eurythmy therapy can be further supported by the essentially therapeutic element, this gives us two factors that work together. We may say to ourselves that something acts particularly on the heart in one way or another, and you specifically support this with a eurythmy therapy exercise. The two things will help one another, and this opens up truly great prospects and can have an extraordinarily great future. Just think of how much of an effect there has been in some respects with massage being used. But this scrabbling about on a person really is, I don't want to say anything against it, I'm not denigrating it, I recognize it for what it is, but it has little significance compared to the kind of massage you apply when you get all the organ systems which are working together there to move differently internally, simply due to the factors of eurythmy therapy. You are inwardly kneading the whole organism through and through, and this involves activity in the etheric, in the astral, and the eye organism. We may say, therefore, that the quality we can fairly acknowledge for massage is in an infinitely powerful way made inward with this eurythmy therapy. In fact, we will also only come to understand the healing consequences of physical therapy, or PT, when we consider the similarity between free exercises and eurythmy exercises. The healing element in PT is but a secondary analog to the principle that applies with eurythmy. In Dornach, I said that if one gets people to do A exercises in rhythmic sequence in a particular way, as we demonstrated on that occasion, extraordinarily much can be done to help children who look weak, children who perform their bodily functions weakly, to gain health, gain the strength they need. But it is absolutely necessary to take the whole human being into account with such things. It happens again and again that this is not done enough, yet the whole human being must be considered. I know this is a commonplace, and you'll say, we know that. But in practice it does happen again and again that this is not done. How often do we hear someone say, this person's heart is not functioning properly, we must do something. Yes, but if we consider the whole person, we have to say, thank heaven that he has such a heart, for his organism would not tolerate a normal heart. When someone has broken his nasal bone, for example, one has to say that fate has been kind to him, for if he were to inhale the air through fully developed channels, this would be too much air for his organism to cope with. We must always consider most carefully what lies behind things in the organization as a whole. When you get someone to do the E movements in a certain way, these E movements will, above all, harmonize association between the left and right sides of the human organism. E movements can be helpful with any asymmetry developing in the human organism. Readers aside, I'm pronouncing the letter I in, as it is in German, the sound is E. End of readers aside. Even with a squint, we can get very good results in eurythmy therapy by using E movements very carefully. With a squint, I would advise you not to proceed the way you would if someone's walk is asymmetrical, for example, or they may use the right and left arms too asymmetrically. Instead, let them do E movements just with the index finger, repeating this as often as possible through the day. You may see good results with this in growing young people, especially if one gets them to do it with the big toe as well. And you'll see the best results if you can get the patient to do the movements with the little toe. Asymmetries relating to vision will respond particularly well to these eurythmy exercises done in the periphery. Conversely, when there is a need to deal with some kind of awkwardness in walking, it may give good results to ask the individual, in a way that will not be harmful to him, to do E movements with the eye, E-Y-E, so that you let him do E movements with the line of vision, the line of sight. We can actually establish a kind of law here. Everything abnormal in the lower human being is normalized by a balancing action done in the upper human being, and vice versa. If there is uncertainty in standing, which again may be due to a number of causes, the U forms are particularly important, though you must make sure that the U form is done completely, with the limbs concerned truly put together, so that the one feels the other. This is particularly important, for this alone makes the U form complete. In eurythmy as an art form, this need only be hinted at. In eurythmy therapy, it must be done so that the one limb lies against the other. Properly done, it results in, quote, standing to attention, close quote, with the legs pressed together. This is an extraordinarily beneficial exercise for people who have a little bit of twitching in the head. When there is need to do eurythmy therapy, especially with children who are on the stout side, the O forms are particularly suitable. All these forms, if they are to be effective in eurythmy therapy, must involve a definite awareness of the muscle system in question. If you simply do the O form the way many eurythmists do it, this may be sufficient for giving an indication in stage performances, but will only prove effective in eurythmy therapy if you actually feel the muscles through the whole length of the arm as you do the exercise. A loosely flung form does not have the effect. The whole muscular system must be felt in every detail. Then you have the appropriate effect in eurythmy therapy. It is particularly important for you also to pay attention to supporting the eurythmy therapy exercise in its continuation into conscious awareness. So if you do the O movement the way I have just shown, this also involves projecting strongly into the conscious mind. If you have a stout individual whom you wish to treat with O forms, tell him, quote, as you do the O forms, think of how stout, how broad you are, close quote. You are literally focusing his mind on the problem to be corrected. Doing so, you are essentially supporting the real intention, which is not at all underestimating the conscious mind as a factor in the therapeutic process. I think there will be some problems with the orthopedic surgeons with regard to this, when one is paying attention to such things. Most successful in the field of their activities, they are still firmly resolved today to see the human organism as a kind of mechanism and treat it accordingly. Apparatus is applied with the aim of keeping the person concerned, aware, conscious of the matter all the time, an example being that I consider that someone should straighten his shoulders and apply bandages to give him the actual feeling that the shoulders need to go back and the matter does not remain unconscious. In that case, conscious awareness is an excellent therapeutic factor. This is something which in eurythmy therapy, too, leads to things being brought very much to awareness, as I said earlier. And such concentration greatly supports the eurythmy therapy. A particularly important thing I want to tell you is that all A forms essentially have a regulating action when the influence of the astral organism on the etheric organism is too great or too weak. In all the cases where we can say the activity of the astral organism is excessive or too little, we can often do a great deal with A forms, repetition of A forms. A forms will be able to help with the two syndromes I discussed in the earlier session today. This thing I have been saying will be the case especially when the astral organism is influenced by the etheric organism, that is, when it is too weak, letting itself be influenced by the etheric. When an irregularity in the astral organism of the head makes it too strong. The opposite may be the case when the etheric is too much under the influence of the astral. That is the case when the astral comes to expression most powerfully in the intestinal organization, so that one gets diarrhea whenever one feels even the slightest bit of fear or anxiety. In that case, U forms will be particularly helpful. Yesterday a question arose which I wish to consider briefly in conclusion. It was whether we may ask individuals who are pregnant or have a pelvic disease to do certain eurythmy therapy movements. Examine the rule given in Dornach, and you will certainly be able to obey it. Although you have to see to it that the pelvic region is left in peace during pregnancy, or in cases of pelvic disease, it has to be left in peace and must not be irritated by eurythmy therapy. Although it is left in peace, exercises can certainly be done with the arms, also sitting down, lying down, leaving that which must have peace fully in peace, or with the head. And you'll still find enough in the information given to intervene with eurythmy in all cases. Of course, if the individual concerned is completely unable to move, eurythmy would be the greatest help of all, for instance, with symptoms of paralysis. But the situation may be that he cannot do the exercises. As you know, such symptoms of paralysis are essentially due to abnormal functioning of the astral body, which is not intervening in the etheric and physical organization. And in that case, one can achieve a great deal with A movements. A most helpful A movement for pelvic disorders as such is an artificial squint, not overdone, but done with due care. It is absolutely true, therefore, that those somewhat decadent yogis who focus on the tip of the nose when doing certain exercises are really intending to evoke the most harmonious function of their pelvic region, knowing only too well what pelvic activity means also for, in quotes, spiritual work, as these people call it. It is thus reasonable to say, these things are such that something done even in jumps by someone whose pelvis is sound can simply be replaced by a more subtle eurythmy therapy, done with the arms, the fingers, and even the eyes when it is necessary. Whatever the circumstances, a pregnant woman, for instance, must not be encouraged to jump about in eurythmy therapy exercises. That will not do, of course. You see, in this case, too, it truly is not a matter of wanting some kind of universal panacea to be acquired in half a day. No, eurythmy therapy, too, has to be acquired by making serious efforts, and it is in fact necessary to acquire it through practice. Almost every time when your instincts to heal have made you use the eurythmy therapy exercise a little bit, you will gain greater ability. It is absolutely true that practice will be particularly useful for making progress in eurythmy therapy. Well, I wanted to discuss eurythmy therapy with you in this more theoretical way, because everything was said at that time in Dornach, with our medical friends passing it on, so that you can always have it. Also, because I wanted you also to understand the whole physiological and therapeutic meaning of eurythmy therapy. On the other hand, we must not overestimate it. Eurythmy therapy will be an extraordinarily important aid in many cases, but we must not overestimate it. And we have to understand that intoxicating simplicity really does not get us anywhere, and that just as cancer cannot be cured by that intoxicating simplicity any more than it can by, quote, harmonizing disharmony, close quote, so a broken leg or arm cannot be cured with eurythmy therapy exercises. We must be clear about this. Our aim with the science of the spirit is not to increase amateurism and lay medicine, but to add to expert medical skills. Forgive me for stressing this over and over again, but to avoid misunderstanding, I wish to stress again and again, and most specifically, that the methods are not part of a lay opposition to conventional medicine, as is often the case with fanatical movements, but take full account of the present status of medicine, seeking merely to take it further along the road on which it needs to go, for the simple reason that it is not true to say that human beings are merely what they are said to be in modern physiology and anatomy. They are this, but they are also something else, They must also be perceived in their mind and spirit. Strange ideas like those repeated by people again and again today will then disappear. Ideas that the brain is a kind of center of telegraphy, with the sensory nerves going to it and will nerves coming from it. The whole does not at all agree with the facts, as you have seen from today's lecture. In the neurosensory system, we are dealing with modeling dynamics, and something is wrested from these to which the mind's activities then adapt. A great deal needs to be done to restore to a sound physiology what has been taken from it by seeing the physical organism as a correlate for the mental functions. Something physical does exist for every one of those functions during human life on earth. But nothing is used for the mind which does not, on the other hand, have much greater significance in the interaction with other organs for the bodily organization. Nothing is used purely as an organ for the mind. The whole of our soul and spirit has been wrested from the bodily element, is taken from that element. And we must not speak of separate soul organs. All we can say is that soul functions are differentiated out from the organic actions and specially adapted to soul activity. We have to grasp in all seriousness what is really taking effect in the human physical organism, and not take such a superficial view of the whole nervous system solely as something put in to serve the inner life. If we do this, we can hope to understand the human organization wholly. The human organization must be thus fully understood to provide a basis for a physiology and therapy that is working in the light and not merely trying things out in the dark. This is what I also wanted to say at the end, so that you do not go away misunderstanding this, and that you will be able to counter the misunderstandings which will come up again and again. Readers aside, there is a new book out by Peter Heusser, H-E-U-S-S-E-R, a doctor from Germany, and it is entitled Anthroposophy and Science, and it is a masterpiece. And it concerns many of the things Steiner is mentioning in this lecture right now. End of readers aside. Criticism was launched into the world with intoxicating simplicity against our cancer medicine, for instance, when in fact people had no idea what kind of insight had led to it. They construe some easy analogy and think they can reject the medicine by rejecting that easy analogy. One condition for being true to the spiritual scientific side of medicine is that we correct misunderstandings a little. For people will find that when they can no longer spread misunderstandings, there will be precious little for them to say. For opposition consists mainly in spreading about misunderstood ideas about the whole of anthroposophy. Read that sentence again. For people will find that when they can no longer spread misunderstandings, there will be precious little for them to say. For opposition consists mainly in spreading about misunderstood ideas about the whole of anthroposophy. Just try and find out how many opponents have anything to say that is not a misunderstanding. I must say, I often read articles or books by opponents, and if it did not give my name, I could just as well connect it with something else. It really has nothing to do with what we are doing here, but concerns itself with completely different things. It really surprises me sometimes. I would like to discover where the matter to be refuted might be found. It certainly is not here. Things are done here in medicine, just as they are also done with reference to theology. You come up against the same thing. You may, for example, tell a truly learned theologian, quote, "We say the things you are saying about the Christ, but something else as well," close quote. He won't be satisfied with our saying what he is saying, and something else as well. He'll say, quote, "You must not add to this," close quote. He will not criticize something that goes against his word, but something which he is not saying at all. He criticizes it simply because you're saying something about something he knows nothing about. We must not fall into this error in medicine. We have to look at things carefully and not say anything against them, but here too we have to add many different things from an insight into the human being in sickness and in health, which has quite a sound basis by now. And that is the end of Lecture 9 and the end of this second section.